weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thank you to JJ Hardigan for keeping us entertained on this bank holiday evening. It is Monday the 6th of June and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, a monster final for the ages. Niall Moran will review the weekend's hurling as Limerick and Clare take the game beyond superlatives and beyond 70 minutes.
The ball fired in by Declan Hannan. Hannan, the Limerick captain, is going for the score, and Limerick lead with a minute left. The Limerick leader supplies the lead score that could edge Limerick closer to the four in a row.
To describe for people who can't see it, it's a sideline for Tony Kelly. It is on his favourable side. He hits him off his left-hand side, but it's between the 14 and the 21-yard line. It's a Munster final. These are things you take out in your back lawn and hope they go over the bar. This is a different story.
They're turning to Tony Kelly again to rescue it from the line.
Caught. Oh my God!
Eddie Leonard puts up the white flag.
Oh.
The game is level.
A very excitable Shane McGrath there. Turning to Gaelic football, Conlon Gilligan will dissect a huge win for Armagh as they end the summer for All-Ireland champions Tyrone. Meanwhile, in association football, our under-21s are in qualifier action in Tallaght. As I speak, they are currently leading 1-0. Will Smallbone goal in the first half, the second half just about to kick off. We'll get the thoughts of Alan Cawley, Pat Fenden and David Connolly as we also try to make sense of our senior side's defeat in Armenia.
Michael Obafemi loses possession, and now it's a chance from the edge of the area, and they've scored! What a goal from Serpsian, their number 8. He was a long way out, and he beat Kelleher. All ends up, and that came out of nowhere. Obafemi lost possession of the ball. Serpsian speculative shot from a long way out, and it's buried himself in the back of the net in the 75th minute.
As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there. It's great to have your company in this bank holiday evening, and I am in the company of Alan Cawley, who is turning around from watching the under-21s. Alan, you've been keeping an eye on the first half. All positive so far.
Evening, Shane. All positive. Yeah, it's all going according to plan. Shane, obviously this was a huge weekend with two games. They got over the first hurdle on Friday night, winning comprehensively 3-0 in the end, and this is the second part of the job. Obviously kicked off at 5 o'clock and they went in 1-0 at half time. Will Smallbone, who scored two goals on Friday night and was very impressive. He's picked up where he left off Friday, and he got the all important goal in the first half, a left foot volley from the edge of the box, and fully deserved half time lead as well. Shane, we've been the dominant team in the game. As I said, the amount of hype around this match, in terms of Jim Crawford even coming out saying it's the biggest game in under 21 history, and it is when you think of what's at stake. Disappointing crowd, I must add, as well. Bank Holiday Monday, they expect more people to be there.
But smashing weather as well.
Unbelievable weather. Great setup, obviously, in Tallaght as well, in terms of the pitch and the facilities. There's no excuses for people, especially if you're interested in Irish football. You should be going along supporting these lads because they're on the verge of making history. If they obviously win tonight, and as I said, it's all going according to plan, Shane, they have the potential to go into maybe a shootout with Italy, depending on the result between Italy and Sweden, or get themselves into a playoff as well with the opportunity to go to a European Championship. So much at stake, but thankfully all going according to plan.
So as things stand now in terms of permutations, that goal that has put us ahead, it's 48 minutes gone now as Ireland defend a corner. So Ireland move up to 19 points, 2 points above Sweden. Ireland do have a game in hand on Sweden, and they're one behind Italy, who have two games in hand on Sweden as well. So there's a lot at stake. Of course, Ireland will be travelling to Ascoli to play Italy away in the final match as well. But yeah, you know, history on the line here, and we could qualify. And hopefully we do qualify. A couple of other news bits today, Alan. We will be chatting soccer in detail a little bit later on in the show, and I will be chatting Gaelic games as well. And speaking of Gaelic games, Armagh and Donegal will meet for the second time this year's championship following Monday's All-Ireland qualifier round two draw. The game will take place on Sunday at 4 p.m. in Clonus with live coverage on RT television and radio. Elsewhere, Leinster runners-up Kildare were paired with Mayo in what will be the second part of a Croke Park doubleheader on Saturday. That match will take place at 6 p.m. with Clare and Roscommon, who are drawn together, throwing in at 3:45. Cork and Limerick will meet in a Munster derby on Sunday at 1:30, with the Rebels enjoying the home comforts of Porky Cueve due to a home and away agreement between the counties. That match will also be broadcast on RT. Meanwhile, Sligo will meet Cavan, and Westmeath will come up against Offaly following the draw for the semi-finals of the Tulchan Cup. Two ties will be played on the 19th of June at Crow Park and will be screened live on RT2, with Sligo and Cavan at 1:45 p.m. and Westmeath and Offaly at 4 p.m. In soccer, good news for Irishman Andrew Omobamadeli, who has signed a contract extension to keep him at Norwich until 2026. The Irish international made 5 Premier League appearances last season as the Canaries were relegated to the Championship. Cardiff City, Alan, are stepping up their efforts to pull off the improbable signing of Wales captain Gareth Bale. So the Bluebirds chairman Mehmet Dalman has flown into the UK to lead negotiations. Bale, 32 years of age, who starred for Wales in their playoff World Cup qualification playoff win over the Ukraine, is available on a free transfer, having left Real Madrid after 9 years in Spain, during which he won 5 Champions League titles. And finally, Liverpool midfielder James Milner will play a 20th successive Premier League campaign next season after signing a new 12-month contract with the club. The 36-year-old's current deal was due to expire this month, but it is understood manager Jurgen Klopp was not prepared to lose a player who has had such a huge influence on the dressing room. So, Alan, lots to get through there. Good news for young Omobamadeli signing a contract extension with Norwich. Obviously, he's plagued with a few injuries, so hopefully we will see some game time. And just the 5 Champions League titles for Gareth Bale and a possible move home back to Cardiff.
Yeah, I think the first one with Omobamadeli, it's important that, obviously, he made his breakthrough, as you said, 5 Premier League appearances. But the fact that Norwich have been relegated, I think that will benefit him in the long run, that he can get game time every week, as I say, and establish himself as a first team player, if you like, and they obviously think very highly of him. Stephen Kenny thinks very highly of him. His huge potential, lad. I'm a big fan of his, so I think that'll benefit him massively, to drop down to the Championship playing every week and let him just further his career and develop it from there. The Bale one is huge news, and obviously he's available coming home from Spain. Why wouldn't you go and play maybe with Cardiff? Huge result for Wales last night, going to the World Cup. He loves obviously representing Wales, as we see, regardless of whatever is going on with Real Madrid or his club form. He always turns up and rocks up for Wales, so he's a proud Welshman. And it would be interesting. It'd be a big coup for him, Shane. And it'd be good for us to see him playing on a regular basis as well, because he's a phenomenal player, Bale.
He'll keep him ticking over for before the World Cup, and that's obviously what he wants. I know there was talk of the MLS and so on, and
Important, and that might be a huge advantage to Cardiff for teams that are kind of going after him, because as you say, he'll need to keep himself ticking over with proper competitive football before the World Cup. He's very proud for playing for Wales. He will want to go to the World Cup and do himself justice as well. Obviously he's a fantastic player, but yeah, I think they have a good opportunity maybe getting him.
Will be interesting to see how that one develops. Alan, you'll be sticking around. We'll be chatting football with Pat Fennin and David Connolly a little bit later on, and you'll also be keeping us up to date on the under-21s match, because it is 1-0 at the moment. We're in the 52nd minute in a sun-kissed Tala Stadium, so all going well for the young boys in green. Do stay with us, because we are going to hear from Niall Moran and chat all things hurling in a few moments' time.
RTE
2FM
On
2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Hurley.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Niall Moran is standing by, but first, we can hear from the winning Limerick manager, John Kiely, after yesterday's epic Munster final.
Game on.
Hurley.
John Kiely, you've been involved in so many battles. You couldn't give me a score before the game from 0 to 10 how your team were. That was some battle.
It was an incredible game, yeah, and it ebbed and flowed, and both teams had dominance at various different stages, and both teams probably struggled a little bit to convert their dominance in those phases into scores, but I think that's maybe a measure of the quality of the defending from both teams, you know, from front to back. You know, both teams worked really, really hard. You never had a split second on the ball. Conditions, of course, were tough as well, you know, a lot of... It's like the ball is flying at them in those wet conditions. It's really challenging. But listen, I think to be fair to both sides, they really, really put on a phenomenal battle out there. It was very, very honest. You know, it could have gone either way. The smallest thing would have opened it up for a goal for either side in those last few minutes. Like, and, you know, Tony Kelly stepped up with a phenomenal sideline to level it in normal time. You know, what a player he is to do that in those circumstances. But all credit to my boys, I have to say.
I trust them. I trust them impeccably. You know, they always, always find a way, you know. And, like, this is a measure of this particular campaign that, you know, we're coming out of really, really tight battles. And they know that they can depend on each other to be there when they need them to be there. So, delighted for the lads. Absolutely thrilled for the lads, because the work they put in is just incredible, and they're as honest as the day is long, so delighted for them.
It takes two to make a great final, and by God, Clare did turn up.
Oh, massively, like, you know, Jesus, you know, they've come so far in the last 3 years, it's just incredible. And that was a proper game out there again today. You know, we've had some great battles all year, you know, there's been nothing between us all year. And who knows, the year isn't done yet either, so.
It certainly isn't, John, and look, every player made a contribution. I know you never really single out players, but Seamus Flanagan was immense.
Yeah, massive game today, you know, he'd have been disappointed with the last performance, you know, coming back off the back of the injury, that was always going to be difficult. You know, Seamus has kept his head down, he's worked hard. You know, he's a really, really honest player. And, you know, I think all credit to our bench as well. Our bench was absolutely immense today. You know, every one of the subs that came off the bench contributed handsomely to the performance. So I'm delighted for them as well. You know, it's been a great, good day for our panel and for our group as a whole.
It's a bank holiday for everyone tomorrow, John, but I'd say you'll need a few more along with the bank holiday.
Yeah, it's been a long day, but it'll be a long night too, maybe.
Brian Lohan, hard to take a defeat like that in a Munster final after an extraordinary game.
Yeah, look, it was real tough, tough way to lose the game, and I did well done. Real tough to lose it like that, but that's the nature of sport, that's the nature of hurling, and unfortunate for us, but that's the way it is.
From your point of view, you know, your team certainly delivered on the day, and you must be pleased with that. I know, heartbreaking to lose, but that was a marvellous performance right to the very end.
Oh, look, you know, we have a good group there, like, they work exceptionally hard, they give their all every time they go out, so we couldn't ask for any more. Unfortunately for us, it wasn't good enough today.
And finally, Brian, defeat, yes, but obviously so much to go forward with.
Yeah, it just puts us under pressure now for the next 2 weeks. It's going to be hard to recover from that, you know, just mentally and physically. So we'll see how we go.
Game on.
Hurling. So that was the thoughts of Brian Lohan, and before him, a very pleased John Kiely. Niall Moran joins me now. And I'd say there are a lot of pleased people in Limerick, including John Kiely, after what occurred over the weekend, Niall. Just from a neutral perspective even, just a breathtaking game of hurling.
One of the best Munster finals, I imagine, this decade. 2004 probably springs to mind for most people ahead of it. But I suppose a game that was maybe reminiscent of the 09 and 10 All-Ireland finals, Shinkakenny and Tipperary, just the ferocity of it, tackling. The intensity of it, something more akin maybe to Coliseum in times gone by, but it really was a phenomenal contest. And I suppose, look, if you do the kind of tribal analogy, when two kind of tribes side by side come together in the manner that they've come together three times this year, that's not the first time the game has been like that, but each time the game has been played between these two teams, the ante is up every time, and you just hope that there might even be another meeting 40 years out.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you'd relish that. Like, I mean, it was, even the conditions, it was rainy, but the atmosphere, even, like, I wasn't down there myself, unfortunately, but even from chatting to people down there, even all day, you could feel something was building, something special was brewing, and it absolutely provided, like, it was just a joy to watch. But I suppose, looking at it from a tactical viewpoint, what was the most eye-catching aspect of Limerick's game?
So it's nothing dissimilar to what they've done before, in the sense that Limerick haven't deviated from what they do. Again, it comes down to just crowding the space, protecting their goal mouth, the ferocity in tackling and hooking. And look, I suppose most people would have said, have Limerick had a specific plan for Tony Kelly going into the game, given the rack and ruin he caused earlier this year and maybe 2 years ago. But I suppose they didn't do anything different than what they had done normally. And I suppose, okay, Tony still came away with 5 points in normal time. Play, and obviously he had a few wides to boot, but I suppose what you saw was Limerick in not changing their alignment. It meant that, like, Shane O'Donnell was forced to go deep looking for ball, Peter Duggan was crowded every time he was on the ball. So yes, while Tony still caused that damage, I suppose the rest of the forwards, with the exception of obviously Dave Searle, who did a thundering game, didn't get that leeway. So, and again, Clare has set up in a similar way. So they pressurised Limerick on the puck out, and I suppose like they just brought that ferocity with two Limerick, and I suppose like they were able to keep that going for 70 minutes, but unfortunately maybe just didn't have the manpower off the bench to finish it out.
Could Brian Lohan have asked a bit more from his players then, or like will it be a frustration? Is this feel that one that perhaps got slightly away from him in the end?
He'll have contrasting emotions today. I imagine he cannot but be phenomenally proud of what they have given him thus far, and that was their best performance to date. Probably frustration after half that they left probably three scorable chances behind them that would have given them a little bit of momentum to push on, and probably as well in the first half, like the goal, like they were kind of going into a 3-point lead and while it was a tight game, the goal kind of gave Limerick a little bit of oxygen when Limerick were struggling just to kind of get a hold in the game, when Clare looked to be a little bit stronger. So I suppose, look, when you draw a game and you're beating after extra time, you're going to look at the minutest of details, and if that is the analysis, then obviously he will find very, very small things that will, you know, that will frustrate him. But in the same breath, look, I'm sure John Kiley and his team, when they look back on it, they'll see things that they'll need to work on going forward. But the interesting thing now for Brian is how this group will react to playing more than likely probably Wexford in Northern semi, a quarter final in 2 weeks' time. And given what they've done to date and the spirit that seems to be in the camp, I've no doubt that it'll take a fair team to beat them in the quarter final.
Yeah, the prelim quarterfinals, of course, the fixture details announced today, and it is Antrim against Cork at 2 p.m. up in Corrigan Park in Belfast, and Kerry Wexford at 2 p.m. as well on Saturday down in Austinstack Park in Tralee. Now, we can't talk about this match and not mention Tony Kelly and just the audacity of taking on that sideline and just having no bother about it and just straight over the bar. He's just a magician.
Yeah, look, I think everyone is out of superlatives at this stage for Tony Kelly. Like, John, I mean, look, he was hurt a year in 13, but it could be argued that in maybe the last three or four seasons, the same title could have been bestowed on him. And even this season so far, you'd have to look at it that he's been one of the top performers. But I suppose one of the things that stood out to me is just the mentality of the man. The confidence, like, you know, you take a pressure sideline like that in such an acute angle, normally you're going to try and force it or, you know, put pressure on your strike, and ultimately, no different to a golf shot, when you put pressure on it or, you know what I mean, you go away from the process, you miss hit it, whereas Tony, he was upright in his style, he just stroked it over. Look, I seldom remember that piece of skill like that, maybe to draw a game and such an intense game. If it was to win it, I'd say, well, at least you'd have free shot at it, whereas if he hit that ball wide, can you imagine the knives that it would have been out from today? And like, again, even within the game, he probably missed a couple of chances that he will look back on and regret, but still to have that kind of that temperament, that strength of spirit to attempt it. Look, but again, the only thing is he's probably nearly taking his leave from some of the other lads that are giving you that kind of performances as well. So look, there's always a chance of magic in that man's run.
Absolutely. And listen, I know we've talked about the strength and conditioning of Limerick in the past, but the pictures doing the rounds on social media of the celebrations in the dressing room, they're monsters of men. They have to be probably one of the most conditioned teams ever to play the sport.
Yeah, I'd say there's a fair few Instagram requests there now. we often said it there when we were talking about the Limerick team. We said, Jesus, they're such great characters, they're such understated that every mother would love to have these boys come home to meet their daughter. And I'd say after seeing bodies like that, I'm sure both mother and daughter would welcome them with open arms.
Yeah, no, like, I only can imagine the damage that, you know, you'd be running up against them going into a 50-50 or anything of the like. So Limerick march on, and John Kiley said there's no doubt in his mind that they'll meet further down the tracks in the All-Ireland series. And as we mentioned there, Niall, we certainly hope that is the case. In Croke Park, there was the small matter of Galway versus Kilkenny, Brian Cody versus Henry Shefflin, and everything that goes with it. What did you make of the Leinster hurling final as a spectacle?
Yeah, as a spectacle, look, it's unfair to compare them in the sense that, look, no, I'm stating the obvious when I say Sunday's game superseded in terms of all the skills that we love to see in matches, but it was a different kind of a battle. You have to give credit to Kilkenny, how they tactically set up. I suppose the role of Mikey Butler was huge. Do you know what I mean? Like, we had a game where neither Conor Mannion or Brian Kilcannon, two of the top forwards in the country, neither of them scored from play. And, like, that was down to Kilkenny just basically crowding that space, not allowing free shots. So for a county that had been kind of attacked from a tactical viewpoint, they definitely showed their strengths in that. And in the same breath, you have to say, look, that Henry would be very frustrated, frustrated that under pressure that Galway reverted to type and probably went away from exactly what they had worked upon. And there was numerous occasions where they shot on the back foot or got hooked trying to do it or ran the ball into trouble. So, and again, I said I was interested to see, in particular, Galway, because you know what Kilkenny are going to bring, and they brought it, and it was enough to obviously win by 5 points on Saturday. But I was thought Galway would bring a bit more, but I'd still be wary of them. Like, they have a nice road into it. Pressure might be off them now because they're probably, the expectation's gone off them again. And so on. Like, they'll be an interesting game for themselves and Cork happen to meet in an All-Ireland quarter final. And so, again, the guys that underperformed, they're getting the time, they're getting that 2 weeks to try and regroup. And they owe it to Sheffield. They don't even see his body language after the match, see how genuinely distraught he was at the performance, I would imagine, the results and maybe the afters that went with it. They owe it to him. They definitely owe it to him.
Why do you feel they went away? You mentioned kind of they didn't stick to what we've seen from them in the past, Galway. Was it a case of perhaps Henry Shefflin overthinking it? Like, he's a man that can handle any occasion. We've seen that as a player, but perhaps overthinking just the level that was needed for such a big match and all of the external factors around it that you're trying to quieten down with Brian Cody coming up against his own county and so on.
Yeah, I suppose, look, one of the things there that, you know, if you're comparing the Munster final and Leinster final, like the levels of emotion that were evident in definitely the players and even in the stands yesterday compared to what you had in the Leinster final, like geographically, those two counties don't bound each other. And I know you say, well, that shouldn't matter, they should go and be clinical and execute their game plan. But like on an emotional level, Kilkenny had a lot more riding on Saturday, and that's amazing given that they'd won the previous two Leinster championships. But I don't think Galway got that emotion naturally out of themselves, and even like some of their tackling, it just reeked of, I won't call it nasty, but they were trying to be a little bit on the edge. I don't think it was coming to them as easy as what it was to Kilkenny. And like I seldom remember seeing Kilkenny celebrate a Leinster championship in the manner that they did afterwards, and I think like every team needs to have a level of emotion that they can draw into. Obviously, Jordan, it's controlled emotion and that, but Galway just looks like a team devoid of that, and maybe it's the first day in which they probably missed Joe's leadership, that steadying hand, like maybe outside of Conor Whelan up front. Like, it's hard to say if anybody really from midfield upwards carried that threat that they needed, and like maybe it came down to Casey even catching a high ball. So if they'll be ferociously disappointed, and maybe this is a little bit we all expect more out of them than what they have, but I still think they have the players to give a little kick before the summer is out. And if they were to get through Cork, they'd be a very dangerous opposition for Limerick in the semi-final.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how they respond. And yeah, they did miss a raft of goal-scoring opportunities as well. But for Kilkenny now, what will this do, even from an emotional level? How big a win do you feel this will be for Kilkenny? And in terms of driving on to the latter end of the All-Ireland series?
Well, it's re-energised the gaffer anyway, by all sights and sounds. And look, even where we've been down in Thurles a couple of weeks ago for the under-20 final, like, do you know what I mean? Kilkenny they are the kingpins of the game. They're leading a role of honour, and they don't like to see anyone steal their thunder. And every chance they get to reaffirm what their status, they seem to be doing it. And again, look, a lot of guys are coming out. Like, Mikey Butler was superb. Paddy Deegan, Hugh Lawler, even though he was under pressure at times for Conor Whelan, he was excellent. And they were still able to call in the likes of Walter, Pádraig Walsh, the bench. But look, again, I don't see an All-Ireland in them. And again, who am I to say if they will or they won't? But I just think the goal that maybe played into their bucket when the pressure came on the last day. I think other teams might be a little bit more wary in the semi-final.
Well, it will be interesting to see how those teams go. I do have to ask, Niall, has been the talk of Twitter and I'm sure of pub conversations and everything, from the emotional side of things, the handshake, or at one stage, the lack of handshake. What did you make of it? Are we making a bit more of it than it is, or is it not, like, or is there actually something brewing there, do you feel? Something a bit nasty, perhaps?
I suppose I qualified them about, say, in two frames of mind. Number one, I suppose, nowadays, with the lack of media coverage of players and managers, we have very little insight into the kind of people that they are. And oftentimes, like, people will ask, well, what's Tony Kelly like, or what's Joe Kenning like? Because they crave that insight into the person that somebody is, not just the player or the manager. And I suppose, in looking at that, like, I suppose, for me, I was disappointed with them. Now, that's the second thing I must qualify myself. Who am I to comment on a guy of the legendary status of Brian Cody? But the one thing I will say is, no different to any other coach in the country or manager in the country, everything that we look to and implement with our teams, our groups, is based on that Kenny model, and I've quoted it numerous times on this show. And the biggest trait that they have always had is that they carry themselves so well as human beings, and how they lose, but more importantly, how they carry themselves as winners. And honestly, I was disappointed in Brian. I was disappointed in what he did. He looked like the cat that got the cream. His behaviour wasn't the same as what it would normally be after a Leinster final victory. Maybe that was the case if he was just so energised by the win, but I think he owed a little bit to Shefflin. Shefflin has given him a lot of service over the years. He's a very good person, on top of everything else. He's a guy who's been through enormous tragedy in his homestead in the last 6 months. And, do you know what I mean? There's nobody bigger than the game and what the game means. And I think Brian owed that to Henry. And Henry, after a delay because he felt he wanted to quench it, he was the bigger man. Once again, he was the bigger man and shook his hand. And I'm just disappointed because, like, do you know what I mean? No different than anybody else. We idolise Brian Cody and everything he stands for, but that's one trait that I just didn't particularly like in this occasion. But look, I'm sure it will, as the summer goes on, they'll quench it. And look, as I said, maybe that's force. Sometimes lads do things they regret, and maybe that was one that Brian might have regretted.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose you can look back at it when you're not in the heat of battle. But all things being said, it was a great win for Kilkenny, a smashing win for Limerick, and hopefully we will see more entertainment from these teams going forward. And just before we do wrap up our hurling chat, a word on a highly entertaining John McDonagh Cup final.
Huge congratulations to Antrim as well, and Kerry, and thought to put on a real great exhibition of hurling at the weekend. And, like, you know what I mean, don't be overruling Antrim. Like, when they performed very well in the first half, scoring 3-14, that kind of performance would cause problems to any top tier county. Okay, so if they bring that at the weekend, Cork just want to be on their game, because they have the hurlers and they look to be in a better place conditioning wise if they can bring that first half performance.
Absolutely. Well, it will be interesting to see, and we will be previewing all of those matches in detail closer to throw-in. Niall Moran, thank you very much.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
On 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Before we turn our attention to Gaelic football, just time to bring you up to date with the Republic of Under-21s there in action. Talisadum against Montenegro. They were leading 1-0. It was going well for them. Alan Colley, it has improved.
It's gotten a lot better, Shane. Yeah, plain sailing, 75 minutes in, and they're 3 goals to the good now. In the 57th minute, Liam Kerrigan popped up just from a rebounder, took a good touch, knocked it in from 3 or 4 yards. And just there on the 67th minute, brilliant play down the right hand side. Evan Ferguson, who's come on as a substitute, played a lovely ball into the box. And Tyreek Wright, who's been brilliant throughout the campaign so far, was on the end to divert the cross. So 3-0, 19 points. Should guarantee a playoff, and now hopefully, depending on the result, as you outlined, Shane, with Italy and Sweden, it could be a shootout with Italy maybe for automatic promotion. But brilliant for the boys.
Absolutely. So 3-0, 15 minutes left, and Alan will be keeping an eye on that one, and we will be chatting soccer with Alan Paffenin and David Connolly a little bit later. But first, let's turn our attention to Gaelic football, and I caught up with Conlach Gilligan just before we came on air.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
And I suppose, Conlach, only one place to start. Armagh 116, Tyrone 110. The current All-Ireland champions out in round one of the qualifiers at the hands of Armagh. What did you make of, I suppose, the match as a whole?
Look, I think as a whole, I think it was a really good game. The athletic grounds in Armagh was sold out, 16,000 people. It was a hive of activity. The atmosphere was electric. I think the game had everything in terms of loads of goal chances, you know, loads of mistakes, everything that's on Ulster-like. And I know the score, you know, probably wasn't as high as it could have been. Like Armagh could have scored three goals. Tyrone could have got three goals. It was just topsy-turvy. And ultimately, it came down to the second half where Armagh were just a wee bit more cohesive. They got their scores a bit easier and Tyrone were wasteful and got punished for sort of very un-Tyrone-like things, sloppy mistakes. And Tyrone just haven't really got going on. As Brian Duher said, they just were looking for form and they just couldn't find it.
Why do you think that is? I mean, current All-Ireland champs, I know it's difficult bouncing back in, but we've seen a rocky league campaign and then stumbling in Ulster and now gone completely. Like, if you're a Tyrone fan or if you're a Tyrone player, indeed, you're going to be looking back on this year with a lot of frustration.
Yeah, well, look, I think you go back to 03, 05, 08. Reigning All-Ireland champions has weighed very heavy on the Tyrone teams. And even this time, players were talking about, you know, doing it back-to-back. But a lot of stuff went against them. Their holiday was late coming home and it meant they weren't prepared for the league. They had a few bad league results. Then had seven players left the panel. Then the Armagh league game, they got four players suspended. Then they looked like they rallied a bit. You know, they beat a good Mayo team when they had to. They beat a good Kerry team when they had to. And you think Tyrone's back. And then Derry obviously put them to the sword in Omagh. And just from then on, you thought, they're in danger. Then all of a sudden, they got Rory Canavan, they got McLeanan in. Off the back of Tyrone being All-Ireland under 20 champions, you think, well, they've momentum again and nothing would whet the appetite for Tyrone more than Armagh in their backyard, but they just never got to the pitch of the game. And I think there's probably no one big thing that went wrong for Tyrone. There was probably 20 or 30 very, very small things. But on the back of it, you can't write Tyrone off because they're the Ulster minor champions at the moment. They're the All-Ireland under 20 champions. The conveyor belt of talent keeps coming and Tyrone are going to be formidable. They lick their wounds and they're going to be a challenge for anybody next year again.
Yeah, they definitely will be looking to respond and respond well. But Armagh now will be looking ahead and they, of course, were drawn with Donegal in today's draw for the next round of the qualifiers. An all-Ulster affair, Conlett, they'll be relishing this one.
Yeah, I think Kieran McGeaney and Declan Bonner, neither would really have wanted this one. But if there was one manager that really definitely didn't want it, it would be Bonner. Obviously, the league game hurt, went out. Armagh had the distractions of the suspensions coming into the championship match. Donegal put them to the sword comprehensively. But in these backdoor games, if you beat a team a first time, it's very difficult to get yourself up and do it again. All the motivation and all the momentum's with Armagh. And then yesterday, like Armagh had 10 different scorers. You know, Rian O'Neill, while he scored 4 points, was probably one of his quieter days. Aidan Nugent come of age, you know, Ethan Rafferty got 2 points out of goals and answered a lot of the questions about Armagh's goalkeeping woes. So Andrew Murnay came off the bench. In terms of the bench yesterday, you know, Tyrone's bench was toothless, whereas Armagh's got 4 points, you know, which was massive. And again, Stephen Campbell probably had the best game he's ever had in Armagh jersey, and he's had some really good ones. And Armagh's momentum's building, and the supporters, you've seen them on the pitch yesterday. They just think now this could be their time. If they could get over this Donegal team, you know, there's no real limit of where they can go because the style of football they have, the kicking game, suits the bigger spaces of Clonus for Donegal and absolutely suits Croke Park as it showed against Dublin in the league.
How big will the self-belief be in this Armagh team? Obviously, it is a challenge of Donegal next, but in terms of having results go their way now and the performance, you mentioned Rian O'Neill. I mean, he was plucking balls out of the full back line late on, and you have a goalkeeper scoring a few points, and Stefan was just immense. So it must be the core group, and with Kieran McGeaney there and Kieran Donaghy and the management team, there must be so much belief in this group at the moment.
Well, there is. Look, and Kieran McGeaney really believes in this group. You know, he's been there 8 years. It would have been very easy for Kieran McGeaney to walk away 4 years ago, 3 years ago, but he stuck with it, and the players were playing for him yesterday. You know, there was a bit of pressure on him, because if they had lost yesterday, people would have been calling for his head, but you speak to any Armagh player, and they would die for him. And it was important for Armagh yesterday, because the reality is, in terms of big championship wins, they didn't have really that signature victory. Yes, they'd beaten Derry a year ago, they'd beaten the down team, they'd beaten an Antrim team in previous championships, but they haven't really beaten one of the big contenders. Tyrone was it, and that'll really carry them forward. And as you say, all the big performances were on the Armagh side yesterday. Their bench scored 4 points, and while they did pick up a couple injuries, and let's hope that they weren't serious. The Wick race won't be such a big problem. Momentum will be huge for them because Donegal are still in limbo, waiting to see what was happening, and it'll be very hard for them to get up for this. But Donegal are formidable as well. They've already played an Ulster final in Clonus, so they'll not want to be beaten there twice in a row.
Well, it will be Armagh Donegal in Clonus on Sunday with a 4 p.m. thrown, and you can watch that on RTÉ television. Moving on to Mayo Monaghan, Banty was disappointed, to say the least, in the manner of defeat out in Castlebar.
Yeah, I think so, and I suppose, look, they would have went to Castlebar with a fair bit of expectation because they are a Division 1 team. They've taken big scalps through the league, so it wasn't beyond the realms of possibility that Monaghan were going to beat Mayo. And Banty will have looked back at the decision and, I suppose, not getting the penalty. I thought, on the balance of play, a lot of the big calls, Barry Cassidy got right. Looking at it in normal time, I would have given the penalty. When you see it slowed down, and that's the benefit we have, is hindsight, and it slowed down. You know, the referee makes a split-second decision. I still think it probably could have been given, and nobody would have any complaints. But it was the madness in Mayo. They looked like they'd done enough in the game, but to fist the ball back there with a player of Aidan O'Shea's ability and experience, it was just crazy. But in getting Killian O'Connor back again, it's been massive for Mayo. Whenever the clutch moments come, you know, he kicks 1-6, you know, all right, it's a penalty and 5 frees. But that's what gets you through these games where it's tough. Monaghan now, yeah, and while they played well in patches, it's just another game where they couldn't get over the line. And the one thing, in credit to Banty, he has assembled an incredible management backroom team, but it is 2 defeats on the bounce, and that's going to be hard for them to take because they did go into this Ulster Championship possibly as some people's favourites, and like Derry did to Tyrone, they put them to the sword. But Monaghan showed a wee bit towards the end that they were closer than maybe Tyrone were in that game, and I suppose we all thought that Monaghan had a big kick in them here, but Mayo do what Mayo do. They grind it out and they get results and they pull points out of everywhere. You know, they had 9 different scores on the day, but it was the haul of 1-6 from Killian O'Connor that did set Mayo apart.
How impressed were you with their performance overall? Was it a bit of over-reliance on Killian O'Connor, or is that just part of Mayo's game plan? When you have a player of that talent, you're going to utilise them to that effect, because we talk about Armagh, the self-belief and how much they will have going forward. In terms of Mayo, where would you see them at in terms of the self-belief and in terms of how impressed you were with the overall package?
It's hard to tell with Mayo in the qualifiers because they're so used to it. They were going into that and they were just going to grind out a win. How they get over the line probably didn't matter. You know, they got loads of game time and players. They've still a lot of players to come back. So it's a case of, if they can win another round and start drip feeding players back into that team, the closer they get to Croke Park is when they come into their own. Like, and Mayo are the one team that they're not going to fear going toe-to-toe with anybody. But it is a difficult draw. Kildare is a very difficult draw. Obviously, Dublin blitzed them, but before that, Kildare looked like one of the form teams in Division 1. They did stutter a wee bit to get to a Leinster final, but they were completely demolished. And it's how much mental damage that Dublin defeat has done to that Kildare team, who were maybe, everybody was maybe expecting them to go to the Leinster final and give a better account of themselves, but they were completely annihilated. And it's how they can get back up there. But they have got the stuff to trouble Mayo. And whenever Monaghan started kicking long balls in and started going after them, you know, Mayo did look a wee bit fragile, and the one thing that Kildare have is if good players inside, if they put ball in, they are going to be formidable for anybody. So that's an interesting game. I would still expect Mayo to win, but I think Kildare will test them, and then at that stage, if Mayo get the Croke Park, again, nobody's going to want to see them because that's when they come into their own.
I do want to get your thoughts on Clare and the job Colm Collins is doing, but just to confirm that the fixtures you were referring to there, Conlon, for anyone that isn't aware, of course, the draw was made earlier. It's a Croke Park doubleheader. So Clare Roscommon throws in at 4:15, and then it is Mayo Kildare at 6 p.m. On Saturday. Before we talk about Clare, Croke Park doubleheader for those matches, right decision, wrong decision?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the one thing about Croke Park, and I was at the Leinster final, and it was a bit soulless. You know, they said there was maybe 30, 40,000 or a wee bit less, and you could nearly hear the players shouting from where we were at. So if it's going to be full, brilliant. And the one thing I think that Kildare and Mayo will do is they'll bring the crowd. And like Roscommon and Clare, novel enough pairing, and I think that will excite the people of Clare. Obviously, on the back of the hurling yesterday, they've got something to get behind. but Roscommon are coming to Croke Park, a serious team as well. They probably felt they didn't do themselves justice against Galway. They were coming into that game and a lot of people had tipped them. So this is a game for Roscommon to get a tilt at a quarter final, and nobody will want them either. So yeah, I think it's probably decent and it's good experience for the teams that win them games. Whoever comes out of it, it's another game at Croke Park and it's different. I mean, that's where the likes of Derry that are sitting waiting, who don't have a huge exposure to playing at Croke Park, will be at a disadvantage, especially if they get one of the more established teams in the quarterfinals.
I do want to talk about Clare. So, as I mentioned, so it is Clare Roscommon this weekend, and Clare are there because they defeated Meath 111-109. Colm Collins is doing a fairly decent job, to say the least, in Clare.
Yeah, it's an incredible job is what he's done, and even his longevity, because he's moved them up through the divisions. They're the second highest ranked Munster team, which when he started was probably beyond anything they thought based on where Cork were at. You know, and to be fair, you know, in the likes of Lillis and Tuberty, you know, he has players that have won Sigerson's that played at the top end of the football they're at. So while you have a smaller panel, it's incredible. And the Meath result, you know, they turned around the league game. Meath will be very disappointed with that. But the fact that they were able to go and win a game that a lot of people tipped them not to win, I think that'll give them great confidence. And when you look at the draw, they won't be too disappointed with getting Roscommon, because the one thing that Roscommon have is really good forwards. The question marks will be on their defence. Clare will defensively be very, very sound. And if Tuberty and Lillis and them boys can get going, you know, I wouldn't bet against Clare making it to the quarterfinals. And it'll be as much as they deserve as well for the job that Collins has done with in a county that football wouldn't be traditionally the strongest. You know, it shows what you can do, you know, from a small playing pool and a small base. You know, no complaining, no giving out about structures or finances. They just quietly went about their business, deserve a lot of credit, and the playing group has stuck together, and it wouldn't have always been easy, I'd imagine.
Well, the one qualifier next week that isn't being played at a neutral venue is Cork Limerick. It's a 1:30 throw-in on Sunday live on RTE, and of course that is due to the home and away arrangement between the two counties. Cork got there after a victory over Louth. Now, I was reporting on this one for the Sunday game, so I sat through it and I watched it all. It was a tough watch, Loud's defensive setup. I think at one stage they had 15 men in their own half for Cork kickouts and everything else. Mickey Hart went with a game plan to try and smother Cork, really, but eventually Cork grinded them down. It was possession based football. It wasn't the most entertaining, but Cork got the job done and they were resilient in their approach.
Yeah, look, and Loud done what they felt they had to do, and it's easy for us to criticise that from the point of view of a spectacle. But from a coaching and a management game plan, what Louth needed to be was in the game coming down the back end so that they could give themselves a chance. And while I suppose they threw caution to the wind a wee bit and got a bit closer, this certainly made it very, very competitive. You know, Cork, I suppose, traditionally would have been the big game there. You know, but it was really a shootout between, you know, your Sherlock's and your Mulroy's, and Sherlock's 8 points was probably the difference. He's probably the top one or two free kickers in the country. And you add in, you know, the likes of the other players, you know, chipped in with a 1-4 and a goal. You know, Mulroy was 4 points out in his own. You know, Jackson got 1-1. You know, Graham's got a goal, but they probably didn't have enough scorers. They possibly didn't really believe they were going to win that game. And while tactically they got it nearly spot on, Cork just probably had enough quality to see them over the line. And as Cork keep going on, even though they've had a bad start to the year, they've lost their manager, they're now suddenly starting to get up the gears, and the draw against Limerick is probably one that Cork would have been delighted with. Limerick have had a great year. They've come off the back of a tough Munster final defeat, but it was a game that they probably didn't expect to win anyway. The tip game was a big one for them. It got them into another side of the qualifier, and Limerick will fancy Cork. There'll not be much in it. It's one of those derby games where in years gone by, Cork would have been seen as the favourites here, but it's probably an even money type game.
Well, it will be interesting to see how it goes. One I'm certainly looking forward to. Connacht, if we wrap up our football chat with the Tailteann Cup. So, another divisive, I suppose, issue is the Tailteann Cup semi-finals being a doubleheader in Croke Park. So, it is Sligo against Cavan at 1:45 and then Westmeath against Offaly at 4 p.m. live on RTÉ on Sunday. So, the teams got there because Offaly defeated New York, Westmeath defeated Carlow, Cavan got the better of Fermanagh, and Sligo Leitrim ending in penalties. Plenty of entertainment across the board, but particularly Sligo Leitrim, an exciting finish.
Yeah, and look, I think a lot of people were calling for this competition, and it's now starting to show the benefits of it. Teams playing, and it's easy to patronise teams that are in Division 4 and Division 3 and give the nice platitudes, but Division 3 and Division 4 in the league is brilliant because there's great games every week, because the teams are playing against teams that they've all a realistic chance of beating, and that's been shown over the last couple of rounds. Both sets of teams are getting to Croke Park, and in terms of development of Offaly or Sligo, you know, Cavan are maybe slightly different. Cavan are punching now where they should have been. They shouldn't be in this position, but that's where they find themselves. But for Sligo, you know, this has been a great journey. Normally, in other years, if Sligo got a bad draw in Connacht, you know, they get beaten the first round of Connacht, then they get a difficult qualifier draw, and it's over. Now, all of a sudden, they've had four games, they make it five games, and that's how counties develop. And I don't like using weaker county or stronger county. It's just how counties develop. The more games you play, the better you become, because your season lasts longer, and you can sell it to the players the next year. They're now in Croke Park, and that's where every Sligo and Westmeath and Offaly and Cavan player wants to be and deserves to be, given they've given as much as any team in Sam Maguire. So I think it's brilliant, but the Sligo story keeps going, and the penalties, I know it's not for everybody, but I thought it was just, I could only see it on Twitter, and you were just glued till it to see who was going to go. And you know, I've probably mentioned the Leitrim, like, they've done really well, they have benefited from this competition as well, and I think it will grow. They're now getting a team holiday, the winners of it, and I think demand for this competition will grow, especially with the game in June in Croke Park and it televised. I think it's good for the competition, it's good for Division 3 and 4 teams, and it will raise the standards, and that's where this needs to be. It's not about, for me, it's not about throwing the provincial championships out there. What about trying to make the provincial championships better by increasing the standards of the teams? I think that's what everybody really wants.
Absolutely, that's what we want. We want exposure, and we want performances across the board, and we want competitive football. We certainly saw some competitive football last weekend, and I'm sure this coming weekend will be more of the same. Conlon Gilligan, I'm sure we'll be chatting plenty as this All-Ireland series progresses, but thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
So that were the thoughts of Conlon Gilligan a little bit earlier before we came on air. But I'm delighted to say Pat Fenlon joins us live now, and Alan Colley is still in studio, and we'll be dialing into David Connolly in a few moments' time as we turn our attention to association football. Before we talk about the Republic of Ireland senior team, Alan, you've been keeping an eye on the under-21s. We are into the 93rd minute of the match, and it is Ireland 3. But Montenegro have pulled one back.
They have pulled one back, Shane, but it won't kind of affect the finals. Scoreline, as you say, we're in injury time now. They're running out convincing winners. It's been a much better performance than what we watched the other night as well, so Jim will be delighted about that. But the most important thing is getting the victory and getting themselves ahead of Sweden and putting themselves in that position where it's looking very likely that we will have a playoff spot. And as I said earlier on, we'll have a shootout, hopefully maybe with Italy, for automatic promotion, depending on the result between Italy and Sweden. But it's all good news, and I'm delighted for Jim and the lads.
Absolutely. We are into the final minute of the match. Ireland are defending a corner which has been whipped in, and it is not dangerous whatsoever. So 3-1 there. So plenty of positivity for the under-21s, but Pat Fenlon not quite as positive for the senior team. You were over in Armenia and you returned home via Qatar. So firstly, thanks for taking the call, because I would say you are knackered. But focusing on the match. So before yesterday, Pat, this Irish side had lost just once in the 12 matches since the Luxembourg debacle, an unfortunate last gasp away defeat to Cristiano Ronaldo inspired Portugal. Listen, I suppose it's not quite as bad as the drop points at home to Luxembourg or Azerbaijan, but how deflating will that result be for this Ireland team?
Oh, I think it'll be hugely disappointing. Obviously, we talked the group up when we seen it with Ukraine, Scotland, and Armenia in the group. We felt we had a chance, but it's, you know, the one thing you can't do in sort of competition or in group like that is go and lose your first game, particularly probably against the weakest team in it. And unfortunately, that's what we've done, even though it was away from home, and the performance as well wasn't very good. So it'll be really disappointing for the players. And on the back of, like you said, that, I won't say hype, but we seem to be getting a little bit of momentum and all the nonsense talk had stopped, but that's just put us right back on the back foot, and it was a really poor performance.
Yeah. Alan, Caoimhín Kelleher was doing the media rounds today. He says Ireland can still top the group. Would you share his optimism?
Well, that's, I think, what any of the players may have said, no matter who was doing the press today, Shane. And it is only the first game, but as Pat said, you lose to the lowest ranked team in the group. Of course, it's going to affect performances going forward and the results going forward. So they have to bounce back. Luckily enough, they do have two games in quick succession, and obviously the Ukraine game then next week as well. So if you're looking for a reaction, obviously to have, it's not like they have to wait 6 weeks or 2 months for the next game to have it on Wednesday night. But it's hard to get away from how poor the performance was, Shane. I would cut them a little bit of slack in the first half, because even watching the 21s on Friday night, because there was the gap of the 3 or 4 weeks, you're thinking it's just taking a bit of time to get up to speed. And I was thinking at half time, that's maybe the first half shake the cobwebs off and we'll get going in the second half and increase things and improve things and it will get much better. If anything, it got progressively worse. And the worrying thing for me coming away from the game the other night was that Armenia deserved to win the match. Mm. So that's bitterly disappointing. It wasn't like it was a game where we dominated and they got a lucky breakaway goal or anything. So that will be a worry for Stephen Kenny and just how poor the performance was. But as I said, they have a chance to resurrect it on Wednesday night.
Absolutely. Nathan Collins was mentioning that he hopes the Armenia defeat can add fuel to the fire for the clash with Ukraine. The Republic of Ireland under-21s is just over. So full-time in Tala, Ireland 3, Montenegro 1. So a great win for the young boys in green. Pat, as I mentioned, you were over in Armenia. Just how difficult were the conditions and what was your biggest frustration with the Irish performance?
The conditions were difficult. I mean, we've probably all played in conditions like that where it's really, really warm. The humidity wasn't bad, but the heat was intense. But it did, it did drop down and there was a bit of a wind came up in the second half. But listen, them situations are obviously difficult, but they're managed so well now in relation the sports science and everything like that. So that it shouldn't have made a huge difference to the team. I think the biggest disappointment for me is I thought the first half we were actually okay. I think in the first half we caused them a few problems. But again, what we've probably caused the team's problems in the last few games we had is being able to get in behind them. I thought Armenia started defending in the first half high up the pitch, and that exposed them a little bit to runs down the side with the likes of Beignet and Robinson at times. Jeff Hendrick was able to get into some decent positions in the first half to be able to slide them passes through. In the second half, what disappointed me is they'd worked us out. They dropped a little bit deeper. And this may sound contradictory, but they dropped deeper in relation to the overall shape of the team and became narrower. So they said to us, listen, you can put crosses into the box, but we'll defend the crosses. So what they actually did is they got their back five really tight and allowed us to have a little bit of space where to get crosses in. And their centre-half, Harry Ann, was brilliant. He dealt with everything that came into the box. And it just cut down all the spaces. And when you do that with us and it cuts down the space in behind, we didn't have any other options. We had no ideas then how to break them down. And it goes back to that same point. We don't have that creative midfield player that is being able to open the door, be very creative in behind. And they also got a little bit more support in attack. In the first half, they were isolated and left Berchikhan up on his own and sort of lost cause. And in the second half, they got Bairdaman up behind him, the boy with the mop of hair. And he did really well from pick up a lot of loose ball, but he supported the strikers quick. And they got more players forward. And we struggled. The game got fairly stretched and suited them a little bit because they counter-attacked us really well. You know, so if you look at the second half, we're then into the situation of long balls into the box, balls from back to front, you know, hitting hopes, Duffy staying up front, set pieces, and even the substitutions were confusing because we ended up, for me, with Beignet, our biggest threat, playing as a right wing back. I know he does have his team the odd time, but for me, threat for him is when he comes in and plays off a striker and tries to get in behind. So just the frustration of that, and we slowly got worse in the game, and we relied on that long ball into the box to see could we pick up scraps. So that was very frustrating. And I keep reading stuff about possession. We have more possession. But possession doesn't mean your football matches, particularly in this day and age. What it looked to me is Armenia went in a half and so these are not as good as maybe they think they are or we thought they are. Let's go and have a little bit more of a cut off them on the counter-attack. And that's what they did, and we ran out of ideas, and that's what was really disappointing and worrying at times.
Well, it will be interesting to see what the response is. I want to bring David Connolly into the conversation. David, there's no time for Ireland to be licking their wounds because they're right back in action then on Wednesday evening. Motivation won't be lacking considering the manner of that defeat.
No, that's right. Good evening, lads. I mean, really disappointing. A lot of what Pat says there, you know, I think we'd all agree with. You know, but if you're picking holes in it, right, which is, I guess, our job now to pick holes in. I mean, I did a the podcast before the game and And I said I would have started Obafemi. Now, I know he actually gave the ball away coming to feet, but I just looked at how Arminia played. I looked at, you know, when I got a chance to play, just a kid chucked in that probably no one knew about. And I just wonder whether that surprise factor would have worked. Throw him in from the start. That's what I would have done. I would have put him in. He's in the best goal scoring form out of everyone. You know, Callum's barely played, to be honest. And even if you go back to the Lithuania game, Callum is shooting from angles where he hasn't got a cat in hell chance of scoring from. And that's because he's not playing enough football. So his decision making's off. And I just think, I think Obafemi should have started. I really do. And in hindsight, you might look back at one or two positions, not just him. I don't know, Manning maybe. Just, I think we could have tried a few other little things rather than the side he selected, which was a safe side. I think away from home against the minor, he could have tried something, first 45, to really, really try and, you know, try to cat amongst the pigeons. Instead, I think he went with a safe team. You know, I think he went with a safe team to get the job done. And I think in hindsight, he might look back and maybe a missed opportunity.
Alan, were Ireland tactically naive, perhaps? And what will you be hoping to see different come Wednesday?
Not sure about tactically, but you can certainly look at personnel as David outlined there, and sometimes that's easy after the match as well in hindsight. But I'm not mad on Seamus as a wing back either, I have to be honest, which I think he's much better coming on to the game. I don't think Seamus had his best game in the world the other night as well, so it'd be interesting to see will he make changes. But it's the reaction you want to see, Shane, because coming off the back of a lot of positivity and we were all kind of saying things are going in the right direction, and they are, to be fair, but when it comes down to the games with the points and the tables and all that kind of stuff, that's when you have to get the results. It's all good and well building towards these games and friendlies and building up a bit of momentum, and that was important to do that, but these are the games that matter the most, and these are the games that he'll be judged on. And I've been obviously all for Stephen up to now, still am, but I'd be worried about the game the other day because I felt it was really, really poor.
Pat, what response do you envisage on Wednesday? And, you know, we have to take into account this is a Ukraine team that obviously suffered a heartbreaking defeat to Wales in that World Cup qualifier. So it'll be interesting to see what response Ukraine will bring as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult game for them, like you say, with all that's gone on with our country, and then obviously that disappointment of not qualifying for a World Cup. So what Ukrainian team, I'm not sure, will turn up. Hopefully one that's nowhere near the team that beat Scotland at Hamden last week, because I thought they were fantastic. And they weren't bad last night neither, in fairness to them. A couple of good chances they could have, you know, taken that game further. But again, it'll probably depend on what team turns up with Ukraine. But again, I think Stephen has got, I'll go back to maybe David's point, he's got some dilemmas coming into this game, because you're looking at, you know, where does he change it? I agree with Alan as well. I thought both wing backs were poor for us on the night. I thought Enda Stevens was poor. I thought Seamus was poor. And Duffy, you know, again, in that centre-half position, in the centre of it, I didn't think he used the ball well at all. And so there is areas in the team, but I still maintain our biggest issues in the team we have at the moment, the centre midfield. You know, Hendrick was okay in the first half. Like I said, he picked up some decent positions, but he was non-existent in the second half. You know, does he change his shape? Does he go away from that, you know, and go sort of to a 4-2-3-1 and try to get someone in that 10 position that gets close to a striker? You know, or does he stick what's done well from so far in relation? Again, does Obafemi come in and play as a main striker? You know, so he does have it. I don't think there's any point in panicking. I think, you know, if his principles are to play that way. And the other thing he's got to look at as well, if you're chasing a game, it doesn't mean you always have to chase the game the same shape. Like I said, yeah, Benny ended up as a wing-back, and for me, he's probably a big threat for us at times, you know. So maybe you change your shape in the team, and you know, when we are chasing a game, maybe going to that four at the back and being able to get an extra striker at the top end of the pitch in. Yeah, so there is some dilemmas in there. I think if we have two poor performances and we don't win the games, you know, well, then we're going to be in serious trouble, and serious questions will be asked. So I think it's a big, big couple of games from. I think we're all expecting to go away to Armenia, pick up 3 points, and then look forward to maybe, you know, I was looking before the game saying, well, Armenia should be able to go there and win. Scotland have been beaten. They're deflated after they knocked out of a World Cup. Ukraine, or we're going to a World Cup, or being knocked out, same for them, always under euphoria, or they're defeated. Now, it's just difficult to call now, because we're now in a situation where we're, you know, sort of down on our boots as well, and can we get ourselves back up?
Well, it will be interesting to see how it goes. Unfortunately, time is against us, gentlemen. Alan, David, and indeed Pat, thank you all for chipping in. Do stay tuned to 2FM because Tara Kumar is up next to keep you entertained this bank holiday evening. And I'll be back tomorrow evening from 6 p.m. But until then, it is bye for now.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.